Hey everyone, this is Where There's a Willis, There's a Way.
And I'm Josh.
And I'm Kendrick. We're here to talk about a whole variety of topics. And I hope that you enjoy just our train of thought.
I mean, the only updates that I have are like leg related, which is super rad, so I'm finally able to start walking again. I like just got approved for that. So I'm able to actually like walk around a smidge. It is super, super sore though. So it is an ongoing process, but very grateful to actually be able to stand up and take a few steps. It is so nice. Do not recommend breaking your leg.
Did you, were you like in a wheelchair this whole time or crutches? Or?
No, I was on crutches, but I had to just like bounce around everywhere essentially. And for a while I was using a, like a mobility scooter, knee scooter sort of thing.
Oh yeah. You're one of those.
Just depending on what?
You got one of those.
Yeah, exactly. Just depending on if, there was going to be enough like flat space, because if there's stairs or whatever, those things are really annoying. Not that they're much better on crutches, but
you can take a scooter down the stairs. That sounds more dangerous.
The knee scooter worked out okay. I like did a couple of stage shows in the knee scooter and it was really rough. It was hard, but I was glad to get out there on stage, but even more glad that I'm at the point that I am right now, and apparently I've been healing okay, so just trying to do what my physical therapist tells me to do and whatever. And shout out to the American healthcare system. I did have to cancel two-thirds of my remaining physical therapy appointments because they're not covered under insurance, and they're going to be $500 a piece if I don't have insurance. And
yikes.
I said no thank you. Yeah, so I will be healed up by the end of April, so says my insurance. And I will only need two more physical therapy sessions, so says my insurance. So thank you, insurance.
Wowee.
This episode is brought to you by the American healthcare system.
So my wife is starting a new job soon, and part of that process is determining how to juggle insurances between the two of our business, our jobs.
Mm-hmm.
And the different offerings, and wow, let me tell you, insurance can suck it.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Insurance? More like outsurance.
More like in what's the opposite of sure? No?
In
knowance. Yeah. That'll get 'em.
Out knowance.
Yeah, out knowance. Yeah, boy, we're on our way to telling great jokes.
Just fucking comedy gods over here.
One of the kids in my son's daycare, his mom also broke her foot or her ankle or had some sort of injury.
Oh, right.
And she was, for quite some time, it was one of those things where you're just like, wow, is it always been this way? Like, was there a time before you broke your foot?
Uh-huh.
But the big thing was she couldn't drive.
Yeah.
So she needed to like coordinate other people to help pick up and drop off her son at daycare.
Yep. Yep.
But dang. Oh,
yeah.
Dang.
That was me. That was me up until 3 weeks ago. I wasn't able to drive until most of the way through March. And then finally got approved for that, and Hannah's like, oh, thank God, now I have to drive him around everywhere.
Were you mostly housebound, or did you just,
your wife I was pretty much housebound. Like, I left my house like up maybe six times in between, like, when I finally got diagnosed with having a broken leg, and when I finally got approved to drive again, maybe eight times. But like over the course of 3 months, I barely left my house at all. Just super relieved to get back out there again and all that jazz. I mean, it's hard. It's tough getting out there and whatever.
That's awesome. I'm glad you're on the mend.
Yeah. Yeah. Me too. Me too. It has been a trip and a half. I did get to play so much video game, so many video games and watch so many movies, but I have since then watched, like, I think 2 movies since I've been able to walk again. And I don't know. I don't know that I'm ever going to watch as many movies as I was watching there for a while. Wow. I was, for 2.5 months, I was watching like about 6 movies a week. And that's a lot of movies.
I mean, yeah, what?
You're like, those are rookie numbers. Yeah. Wait till you get up to my level.
How do you track them all in Letterboxd?
I do. Yeah, I do. I watched.
I'm gonna be embarrassed if I've watched more than you this year. Hold on, I'm looking now.
Oh man, we could totally look and see. Let's see. Check out my stats real quick. And by real quick, I mean it's loading. Okay. Does your stats page just show this year? Does it show?
So if you go to your profile.
No, I found it.
And then there's stats for 2024.
Yeah, I found it. Okay, I have my total. Do you have your total?
I do, yep.
Okay. Is your total above 40?
It is.
Is your total above 50?
It is.
Oh, damn. Well, is your total above 60?
It is.
Is above 70?
No.
Oh, okay. It is. How many did you get?
69 nice diary entries for 2024. Nice.
Yeah, no, I have only a peasly 53. So
wow.
Just, yeah, really, really slowing down. Yeah.
There was a period of time where, like February, it was like 8 or 9 films a week for a while. But yeah, wow. In April and March, it's been 3 films a week.
Yeah, actually, I was doing pretty good with my movie watching, and then I watched Perfect Stranger, and then I watched on March 13th, and then I've watched 2 movies since Perfect Stranger.
Wow. I was going to check real quick. I know that I watched some short films.
Mm-hmm.
And I was going to see if I logged any of them on here, because I feel like that would really boost the numbers.
Oh, yeah.
I don't think so. Yeah. Okay.
Nice. What was the best movie that you've watched so far this year? Like, what are your top, if you had to say, like, your top 5 or so movies that you've watched?
Let me just sort by rating, if I can do that. Definitely the number 1 rating is... Mad Max Fury Road rewatch.
Mm-hmm.
The other one is probably Doom Part 2. Oh, I watched Society of the Snow.
Nice.
Did we talk about that?
I think we did. I believe we did.
It's a movie about the soccer team that crashed in the Andes. In the
is it 70s. A 40s movie?
No, it just came out.
Oh, okay. Oh, okay. Then no, I don't think we talked about
yeah,
it.
Yeah, so it's based on the 1972 this is a true story. It's based on in October of 1972, an Uruguayan charter plane carrying a high school or college soccer team crashes mm-hmm. in the Andes, and they're there for like 80 days or something. I'm not sure how long, but a long time. And spoilers, I guess, for real life, but they have to eat the people, the dead that are on the plane in order to survive.
Oh, wow. The people who died already, or I'm guessing?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And it was like such a intense story. So a little backstory. When I was a kid... There was a movie that came out, I want to say in 92, called Alive, 93. And it stars, it has Ethan Hawke in it. Mm-hmm. And I saw that.
Who we know, obviously, from Fast Food Nation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, right. Yeah. Fast Food Nation's famous Ethan Hawke. And it was the same story as Society of the Snow. And... Okay. I saw that when I was pretty young, and I think that was my first realization that you could eat a human body.
Oh, wow.
And that movie scarred me as a kid, my sister and me.
Wow.
And we would always, like, you know, when we were really spooked out, we're like, well, at least you don't have to eat people. Or, like, if I wanted to gross out my sister, I'd mention alive, and she'd be like, ugh.
Oh, man.
So that movie really scarred us as younglings. Mm-hmm. And I hadn't really thought about this story until this movie came out, Society of the Snow. And I kind of was like, I don't know if I want to watch it. It sounds like an intense story. But I'm glad I did, because it was really intense, but, like, so emotional and so moving. And they also, like, it's a way better movie than Alive. Like, they cast actual native South Americans, for one thing. But
mm-hmm.
And it's all told, and it's, like, feels much more respectful to the story than Alive was. But
nice.
Yeah, that's probably a couple of my, like, tops from this year. What about you? What are the top movies you've seen so far this year?
I was working on the list while you were talking about them.
You mean a vamp a little bit more?
No, I'm good. I got them. So I just looked at the ones that I rated, like, 4.5 stars and above. I'll skip over the ones that, like, everybody's watched, because I don't need to tell people to go watch those. never mind. I'll just give them all of them. So, in order from the beginning of the year, Paddington 2, everyone should go watch it immediately. I don't care what your excuse is. If you're against piracy, don't care. Figure out a way to watch it legally, or go buy the DVD, like, now and go watch it. Shaun of the Dead, I love that movie. The Dark Knight. John Wick Chapter 4. The Godfather Part 2, which is, like, in my top 5 movies of all time. I just watched it for the first time this year, and I was blown away. Solaris, which is a Russian movie from 1972. It's a sci-fi movie, kind of like a counterpoint sci-fi movie in comparison to 2001. The director really hated America's, like, cold look at space, and so it has a very human sort of look at space. It's really cool. Wolf of Wall Street, French Connection, Sunset Boulevard, Dune, and Blade Runner. So I hereby recommend all those movies.
Dune, Part 1, the Denis Villeneuve movie, or, like, the David Lynch, David Dune, or?
Yeah, it's a good point. So, Dune 2021, so the Part 1 of the Denis Villeneuve movie. I think we have it on our agenda to talk about Dune, but I have so many thoughts about Dune, and I'm so excited to talk with you about it, because I'm sure you do, too.
I do, and I don't know if we want to save and just do, like, a back-to-back, like, a whole episode just on Dune. I don't know if we want to maybe save that topic, because I also have a lot to talk about.
Yeah, maybe we should save it, because I'm reading the book right now, or listening to the book, and let's see, what Libby will tell me. Libby is the our library app. I don't know if other libraries use the same sort of thing, but I am 48% through the book right now, so I have 14 days left to go. So sometime within the next 14 days, we should schedule time to do a Dune talk.
You saw both Dunes?
I saw both Dunes, yeah. So I just rewatched the first one, because I was like, I don't remember anything about what's going on. Mm-hmm. So I watched the first one, and then my youngest sibling had opportunity through their work to get free tickets for a few people. So swooped those up and saw Dune Part 2. I think I'm going to go try to watch it in IMAX, though, if it's still playing, because I've heard it's really good in IMAX.
Oh, nice. I saw it at our OMSI IMAX,
which
was an experience, and I'll save that story for our Dune review, though.
That sounds great. Yeah, I'm excited to check.
I have
that.
Read Dune, the book, just the first book, though, so that'd be good to talk about all that together.
Yeah, definitely. Like, I have the other ones in my, on my queue or whatever, but I don't know if I'm going to, like, want to sit with this one for a second, but I'm liking it so far, so excited to talk about that. But yeah,
I read Dune when I was maybe 20 or high school or somewhere around then, and then I reread it back in 2021 when the first Denis Villeneuve movie came out.
Yeah.
And I was surprised at how like well I still liked it, but that's all I've read. And I've kind of heard that the series kind of really goes off the rails, so I'm a little hesitant to read more, but...
Yeah, I hear that, like, the... I saw some Facebook graphic a while back about it, and it was, like, the of the six books that were written by the original author, Frank Herbert, like, the first two are kind of similar in tone, like, they're kind of space-grounded sort of political drama sort of things. And then, like, the next two are, like, just strange musings about philosophy. And then, like, the last two are, like, even more strange esoteric musings about life. It's like, well, I don't know how interested I am in things past Dune Messiah. And that's probably why Denis is just looking to adapt through Dune Messiah. And then he's probably going to be done with it. But, yeah, I'll be curious to know if I actually enjoy those, if I get to them, or if I'm just like, I'm good, I think.
Yeah. Yeah, I would be interested to hear that. Maybe I'll go back and maybe read the second one, because I think the third Dead Evil New Dune movie is supposed to sort of be the first and second books. So.
Mm-hmm.
yeah,
definitely.
Awesome. Well, something else I wanted to talk about on this episode was some Star Trek updates. We hadn't really talked about Star Trek lately. How is your Lower Decks journey going?
I just finished up. What season was the last one? Was it season 5?
I think it was season 5.
Yeah, I just finished up season 5. So there's only like 4 episodes I haven't watched in season 1 because I skipped it partway through. Now that I like the characters in the world, I'll probably go back and check it out.
Season 4 is the one that is already in. Season 5 is coming out this year.
Oh, okay. Then, yeah, I just watched all of season 4. Yeah, it was great. Are we going to give spoiler warnings, or are we going to chat spoilers? Or
I don't know. Do you want to, is there anything like non-spoiler you want to talk about before we could just talk? We could just kind of dive in spoiler for a little bit. I've seen it all, so I don't mind.
Yeah. I think it's great. Yeah. We can just go into spoiler though.
Okay. Talk at me. What, was there anything that like surprised you? I think I've talked a lot about, I think on this podcast about Lower Decks. So I feel like it perfectly encapsulates my dream of what I wish for every like multi-genre storytelling universe. So like Marvel or Star Wars, for example, because Star Trek has allowed itself to have like different styles of things, but all feel true to what that the core feeling is. And this was like the biggest stretch for that because, you know, it's a adult animated cartoon done in the style of Rick and Morty, but it obviously has so much written from a like love of Star Trek. And there's so many references to just the in jokes that people who watch Star Trek all the time make. But so yeah, I've talked a lot about it. So
I have loved it. There was an episode a while back where they talked about like an admiral. There were like rumors about an admiral being taken over by like a space alien, and Star Trek having Starfleet having a bunch of those infiltrating their ranks. And then two characters are like, I don't know if that actually happened. And it's referencing like a season 1 episode of Next Gen. There's all these crazy deep cuts, like the Pakleds, like throwaway species, literally from like 1 episode of Next Gen, become a main villain of the second season. The character who was kind of written out of Star Trek and was essentially thought to not exist gets brought back to again be a villain of a season with Nick Loncarno or whatever his name is. I don't know, man. I am loving it. And I love that like legacy cameo that just happened a little bit ago too, with one of the OG Star Trek actors in it as well. It's a delightful little show. I'm in love. I'm in love with it.
Yeah, and but it never feels like it's making fun of the seriousness or the fact that the show it's not like it's taking itself seriously in itself.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it's also being like, these concepts really are ridiculous. Like, holodecks and the fact that some people, like, there's a whole bit where, so the show, if you haven't seen it and you're listening to this for some reason, the show is about the, like, enlisted crewman on a spaceship, on one of the starships in Star Trek. And, you know, they're all sleeping in bunks in the beginning, which in and of itself is a strange concept. Like, why would that be necessary? But then, they get promoted and they're having to pick a room now that they're a promotion, but all the rooms have like the massive bright lights of
the nacelles,
and all the parts of the, you know, the starships, which completely makes sense. If you ever look at how bright those lights are, that was all just very funny. And,
or they're like right in between the two holodecks, so they just hear people just fighting or fucking constantly.
Yeah. And the other thing that I love that's like an ongoing joke through the whole show is this show, the Cerritos, they're like one of their main things is what they call like second contact. So the Enterprise or whatever, you know, the main TV shows would be first contact and they'd introduce themselves and it'd be all adventurous. And then the Cerritos and Lower Decks goes and does second contact, which is like, we got some paperwork to sign and we got some crates to unload and you gotta like look at these maps and you gotta agree to these rules. And it's just like the bureaucracy that has to exist, but you never see on the main show because
that would
be boring when, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't think like Lower Decks would work nearly as well if it was just Lower Decks of the best ship in Starfleet.
Yeah, I agree.
I think that, yeah, it being like so middle managey or low on the rung, I think really adds a smart charm to it. It's a really, really well done show from just a conceptual standpoint. And then all the episodes are, I mean, there's a few ones that maybe aren't as good as other ones, but for the most part, I was laughing a few times an episode.
Sure. Yeah.
And some of them are like really riveting Star Trek sort of concepts and, yeah, it's great stuff.
So there's this, you know, in main Star Trek shows like Next Gen or whatever, they'll capture like these evil entities, like evil AIs, or there'll be like a one-off episode, you know, where some old guy uploads his brain into data or something on a planet where only he lives, like just random weird stuff that is just that episode, and then they go away. But in Lower Decks, they have like the museum of all the evil entities.
Yeah, all like, the like evil AIs.
Yeah, it's like, well, we got this museum of robots that we have here, and it's just funny to see like every, like when you see all the common evil AIs next to each other, that's all really funny.
Yeah. The voice cast is like for the guest characters are really great too. Like Paul F. Tompkins is a recurring voice actor, and Jeffrey Combs plays one of the evil computers, who of course played Wei-Yun and
every
Brunt.
Other character.
And every other character that you've ever seen in Star Trek.
Yeah.
And they had somebody else. Oh, Richard Kind. He was in an episode where he played an ambassador from a species where whenever he would get embarrassed, he would duplicate into another version of himself.
Yes.
And so he just ends up apologizing and embarrassing himself again and again and again until the ship is overrun with them, much like a Tribbles episode. And the way that they resolve it is great. So, yeah, it's so good.
Yeah. But yeah, Tanya Newsom and Jack Quaid are like kind of the main character actors, and I think they're great. And there's actually a podcast called the Pod Directive, which ran for, I don't know, like 18 months or something. Like it didn't, I don't know why it stopped. But it is hosted by Tanya Newsom and Paul F. Tompkins, and they get together and they tell, like, you know, they're both very funny people, and then they also will interview someone often connected to Star Trek in some way, but they will just talk about Star Trek and the history of Star Trek and their experience working on the show and their experience doing other stuff. It's a really funny podcast. I'd recommend it. So that's the pod directive. Yeah, it's really funny. But yeah, I love both of them. I'm really happy with what this show is.
Oh yeah, same. And even if I don't see this happening, but even if it ended up being a stinker towards the end of its run, I would still be very excited for what we did get. It's very, like, Kendrick and I both love Star Trek, but it's very rare that there's a good stretch of Star Trek where it's just hit after hit after hit after hit. Like, I think maybe seasons 3 through 7 of Next Gen, seasons 3 through 6 of Deep Space Nine. Those are good series and good hits. But even amongst those, there's a bunch of stinkers. The fact that they've had, like, I didn't love the first season of Lower Decks, but the fact that they've even had 3 stellar seasons back to back to back to back, I think says a lot about the show. And it's, I think that people over time will eventually give this show all the accolades that it deserves amongst the fans of Star Trek, because it's great. It's really funny.
And even, like, you know, we talk about how funny and witty it is, but it still mm-hmm. has a moment where it'll talk about, you know, serious issues or sort of have like a moment of tension. It's not just sort of like throwaway Saturday cartoons that don't matter. And I think that is like a fine line to walk.
Yeah. And I think especially as the show goes on, you get to know the characters more. It becomes almost like a space sitcom where mm-hmm. The funny part is seeing the characters react honestly in character to these crazy situations that are happening around them. It's not so much the crazy situations. And I feel like season one was maybe a little bit more leaning into the Rick and Morty. It's crazy situations. Characters are a little bit moldable to what we need them to be. And then as it gets along, as the characters kind of find where their grooves are, it gets to be really, really enjoyable. Like Tendi, I think, is one of my favorite characters across all of Star Trek.
Yeah.
And it's, I mean, that's great. It's a silly, I mean, it's a quote unquote silly cartoon. And they've created one of the top 10 Star Trek characters in it. So,
and I love how now they retconned Orions. Because the Orions were real big in the original series, but basically they were like, hot pirates, essentially, like
mm-hmm.
people who didn't wear a lot of clothes but put some green paint on their skin, and that was all. And in this, they talk about that. They're like, wait, aren't you all pirates? And she's like, well, no, not all of us. And then they go to their home world, and they are, there's like mostly pirates, but also scientist pirates or whatever, doctor pirates.
Yep.
So it's very funny, but also like explores that self-criticism, which I mm-hmm. think is a good space to be in. I also really like Shax, who is the
Shax is great.
Bajoran tactical officer. I had forgotten that he dies in the first season, then comes back to life on the second season, and everyone is like, or Boimler or whoever is like, what? Why? And it's like a reference to just people randomly coming back to life in Star Trek all the time. Loved that whole plot line.
Oh yeah, it's so good. It's so good, and his whole like, he suggests every single time there's a problem as a security chief, he's like, we could eject the warp core. And that's his suggestion every time. And so when it finally ends up being the right solution, it's just this moment of just gloriousness. It's so good. He's great. And it's such a fun contrast too. Like all of the characters and the races in it, they feel like they are kind of exploring, like you said, with the Orions, a different angle of the things. Like, the Orions, the main Orion character that we get to see, Tendi, she has a past that is more Orion-y, quote unquote, but you kind of get to see her trying to push against that, almost like a Data or a Spock, where they're like, yeah, I get that I'm this, but I'm trying to be that. And so that's fun to see, even though she's also like really warm and empathetic, unlike those two other characters generally tended to be portrayed. But Shax is a Bajoran, which we are mostly seeing as religious sorts of people. And he is religious, but he's also incredibly masculine and incredibly violent, and yet also takes care of his heart. Mm-hmm. And I love seeing that like sort of exploration, the Ferengi are done so well in the show too. There's a great joke towards the end of season 4 involving a Ferengi setting on a bomb that would totally happen.
Oh,
and
yes.
Yeah. It's so good.
Yeah, I forgot about that. That's the one where Lita and Nog, right? And they're is that who it is? And they're like from Deep Space Nine and they're like negotiating, or am I misremembering?
No, so that is earlier in season 4, but at the very end of season, and it's Lita and Rom, very end of season 4, the Ferengi Genesis device is going to blow up, and they get to the point where they're just about to deactivate it, and they're like, you've reached the deactivation phase. Please insert one slip of gold pressed platinum to complete deactivation of the bomb. So good.
Another just like witty writing bit that I really liked is the fact that they, in this ship, the Cerritos is a California class, and all California class ships are named after towns in California, but like suburbs and small towns, you know, it's not like the San Francisco or the Los Angeles. No, it's like, you know, Englewood or whatever, like just these small places that are now ship names. It's very funny. I think I mentioned on here that I play Star Trek Online off and on, and there's a bunch of Lower Decks crossover stuff, and people who buy a California class will always pick some like random place in California and name their ship, and that's always a fun moment.
Wow.
Yeah, great. The new season of Discovery, I don't know if you're a Discovery guy, but that starts tonight actually as we're recording this.
Ooh, that is exciting for Discovery guys out there. I'm not a Discovery guy. I am glad and grateful for Discovery's existence and popularity enough to reinvigorate the franchise. And I love a bunch of the Discovery characters. Actually, I love Stamets and Saru.
Oh, I thought that was your list with Stamets.
It almost could be. Saru, Stamets... what's Hugh the doctor?
Someone else with an S name.
Shit. What is the what's the engineer's name who's got an attitude?
Oh, the played one who's by that played one by
Tig Notaro.
Yeah, Tig Notaro. Who I just heard the Pod Directive interview episode with Tig Notaro.
Nice.
Listening to that the other day. I don't remember her character's name.
Yeah, I like those characters a lot, but the rest of the cast, I feel like you just don't get to know that well, and I don't love the... It feels very in line with like the J.J. Abrams sorts of shenanigans with... Like, there was one episode, I think, in like season 2 or 3 where there's a whole chase happening inside of a turbo lift, but the turbo lift was like this giant warehouse... Uh-huh. And it just, there's no sense of scale or space or anything like that. People will like beam within the ship all the time. And it's like, well, usually they don't really do that. I don't know. It's just, there's a lot of silly rule breaking that happens in the show that I'm not a big fan of. And I just don't love the writing of, we have to deal with this next huge crisis. Everything is a giant, big time bomb, whatever. But yeah.
It's not my favorite. I still watch it because it's hard to not watch Star Trek, but
and I really shouldn't be complaining. We went so long without any Star Trek, and now I'm like, I don't like this as much as I could.
My biggest complaint is the fact that, so part of the spoiler for Star Trek Discovery, I suppose, but at some point they jump for, so it starts around the time of like before the original series, so before Kirk is a captain, and then it jumps forward 500 years or something, so hundreds of years after like the Next Generation era, and the later, I don't know, 3 or 4 seasons are all set in that time, and that allows them to suddenly like be like, oh, we have all these technical solutions to things, but it definitely is at the point where the spaceship can go anywhere instantly. That's explained. And then they also have point-to-point teleporters, so they can just be anywhere instantly. And it removes a lot of tension. and they can just kind of hand wave a lot of technical solutions away, which, to be fair, Star Trek does often, but I feel like a lot of times at least it tries.
Yeah.
But this has allowed it to lean much more into like some social commentary, which I think has been kind of nice to see. But yeah, it's okay. But it is starting tonight, so maybe I'll watch it after we're done recording.
Woot woot.
Speaking of Star Trek, there was a article in the New York Times recently about two brothers, Troy and Andrew Nelson. Did you read this story?
I just opened it up, but did you see the editor's note on it?
I did. So I'll post the link in the show notes. But it's about two brothers who passed away in... They lived in Washington, and they have what people to believe is like the biggest collection of Star Trek memorabilia.
Uh-huh.
It's hard to know for sure exactly because there's not people out there like documenting sizes of collections, but
yeah.
It's like bigger than there's a museum, I guess, in Ohio, and they're like, this one collector has more than this museum does. But it is huge, and the few pictures in this article show a lot.
Yeah. But you did read the note about them possibly molesting three adults.
Yeah, so
disabled.
There was a lawsuit that they had molested mentally disabled adults, but the they were named in a lawsuit, and then the state said it intended to appeal but missed the deadline, which I feel like. That really, this was in 1998 also. A state saying, oh yeah, we meant to appeal, but just didn't get around to it. They were never criminally charged, so I don't know the details of that. But
oh, okay.
can't speak to that personally, but I can tell you that this collection, though.
This collection is rad, though.
Yeah.
Just scrolling through the pictures.
Yeah, there's like every... action figure possible. They have a like life-size captain's chair, spaceships, Legos. It's a lot of stuff. Did you ever have any Star Trek toys or memorabilia?
My dad had a Star Trek like action figure of Picard, and he actually sold it to help us pay for making a treehouse. Whoa. Yeah.
There's been some treehouse. Yeah.
Well, it was during the if I remember correctly, it was like around the time of the Great Recession. Money was a little tight, and he promised to build us a treehouse, and he made it work. I don't think he was super enthused to do it, but I'm forever thankful for him for doing that. So I got to see, and he had it sealed in the box too.
Oh.
So we called him Stinky Picard because it's like Stinky Pete from Toy Story 2, always left in the box. So I've seen Stinky Picard, and then he also had a universal remote that was a phaser from Next Gen.
Wow.
Yeah, we've might have actually been an original. I think it was a Next Gen one. But yeah, so we used that for a little bit. We had to program it to make it work on our TV, and then eventually we got rid of CRTs, and now it is somewhere in some box, I'm sure.
I was like, back when universal remotes were a thing.
Yeah.
You should find out if your dad still has that, though.
Yeah, that'd be a good question. I don't know how much those are worth right now, but I'm sure you can make an IR receiver of some sort and hook it up to AI, whatchamacallit, and then make your walk into your room and then shoot it at a wall, and then it would just turn lights on. That'd be really cool.
Yeah. But. Yeah, that's definitely what I was thinking.
Yeah.
You could program it to have Bruce Willis's voice, and then whenever you're in a chat room, the little phaser would be speaking back to you in Bruce Willis's voice.
I cannot think of a better use for anything, actually.
I had, growing up, a handful of action figures. Mostly all Next Gen, I think, and like a bunch of their accessories, like phasers and tricorders and med kits and
yeah,
I think different costumes. I think Riker had like a two tops, one with like a big slash across it, like he'd been attacked.
Mm-hmm.
And then I also had a toy runabout, I think, from Deep Space Nine.
That's
and
fun.
And I feel like I had one other thing that you could put the action figures in, but I don't remember what that would have been. So maybe it was just the runabout. I assume my parents still have that, but I guess I don't know. I hadn't thought about it. This New York Times article, though, does talk about this museum, like I was mentioning. And now I kind of want to go, although it is in Sandusky, Ohio, which I cannot tell you the next time I'll be near Sandusky, Ohio.
Hasn't Sandusky, Ohio been described as the bedrock of civilization itself?
Like the city of bedrock from the Flintstones?
I believe so.
I can't confirm or deny. let's see how long of a drive it would take us to get there. It'd take us... Well, Google Maps is calculating for a long time. 35 hours.
Oh. For those of you that don't live in the United States and live in a country that is much smaller, to go from one O state to the other O state, 35 hours.
And we could go through Oklahoma and hit all the O's.
Oh, right. I forgot about Oklahoma. Sorry, Oklahoma.
Yeah, the three O's of the U.S.
Yep. Are you ever frustrated when you're like working on filling out a form and it has you select, you're typing away on your keyboard, you're like, enter in your address, ba-da-da-da-da-da-da, enter in your city, ba-da-da-da, enter in your state, and then it's like a drop-down menu, and then you hit O, and then you type in R, and then it goes from O, like O, Oklahoma, Ohio, Oregon, and then you type in R, and then it immediately goes to Rhode Island. Yes. And you're like, no!
Yes.
It's so annoying. Mm-hmm. So annoying. Like, there's 50 states. We should have, at most, two states doubled up on a letter. Instead, we have three states on O. God knows how many states on A. It's insane.
A bunch of N's.
A bunch of N's and M's, yeah.
Yep. One of my biggest pet peeves on an internet forum is when it tries to be helpful. And like, this is less common now, but have you ever been on an internet forum where it auto tabs you to the next field?
Oh, yes.
That's the worst. Like, especially when it gives you three fields for a phone number and I'll be like, do, 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 tab, do, do, do. And then all of a sudden I'm like, wait, I'm on the third bot. What? Yeah.
Yeah. Yep.
Drives
yep.
me yep, bananas. Yep.
That and like, I think the other thing that drives me crazy about phones is that there's no universally accepted way to type in phones. So every site will be a little bit different in what they want. And so sometimes, sometimes you'll just type in your number. Other times you'll type in numbers separated by dashes. Other times it's like open parentheses, first three numbers, close parentheses. And it's insane. And then trying to format it all. I hate that. I hate that so much.
Yeah, definitely.
If I could be dictator of America for a day, that would be probably like 89 or 90 on my list of things to do, but I would get that done. I'm sure of it.
Wow. I don't know if dictator of America would even have that sort of power.
Yeah.
Dictator
of the world.
Yeah. I don't know how often, if ever, you have utilized websites that are hosted in other countries, but it is interesting to try to interface. I don't know if it's like the same technology and sort of like best practices have to exist, but I've noticed in sometimes other countries will just do things in what feels like a much clunkier way, and it's not as though doing it the right way is harder. And so I don't know if it's just like cultural, like, oh, well, maybe we prefer to have our fields do this because every website in, you know, Germany does our fields like this, and that's what we're used to. And if we did it like the way America does it, we would be confused. So we're going to continue doing it this way. I don't know what the reason is, but so the reason this came up recently was I started taking a French class at the local community college. Mm-hmm. And it's like a, it's a, called French Conversations, and it basically is like halfway between like a level one class and a level two class. So mm-hmm. you have to know a little, but you don't have to know a ton. I just had my first class last week, and
nice.
They, you know, it was the teacher kind of goes over the whole deal. I haven't been in like a class in, I don't know, 15 years, 17 mm-hmm. years, something like that. It's been a long time since I've been in any sort of college like class, but this teacher goes over like the whole thing of like all this homework and everything, and she gives a bunch of links to these French websites that are in either Canada or France, and they're for people who mostly migrants, I assume, but for people learning the language, and they're like online quizzes and things. But
mm-hmm.
It is interesting to like interface with these things, and you're just like, wow, this feels very foreign to me, and not just in like a language way.
So. Yeah, it's interesting. I would guess that it has to do with something where like some guy started it and then it's just kept on going ever since then. Like, why haven't we switched to the metric system? Because we
yeah.
started using Imperial and then never stopped.
Yep. Yep. Funny story about that French class. So she's the teacher that spends the whole first hour or whatever going over everything, and it all seems like exactly what I was thinking. I can understand everything. You know, it's a good amount of French and English and all the descriptions and all the text and everything. And I'm like, feeling good, feeling confident. And we have to introduce ourselves. And everyone, like, you know, it's 10 people or something in this class. And I want to say seven or eight of the rest of them were like, my boyfriend is French and I speak French all the time and I'm just brushing up on my French, or like, I work with French refugees and we speak French a lot. And I'm just like, oh boy. Like, I'm moving to France next year. I'm just like, what is going on? This is not what I was expecting. So next week we'll have like actual class where we'll be in breakout groups, and I'm hopefully not. Like, I think the material will be up to my speed, but I just don't want to be the one guy who knows like the bare amount.
Did you take French in high school?
No, I've been teaching myself for years, which is why I wanted to take like an actual class. I can read it and understand it okay. Speaking, or like, it's coming up with the words that I have a harder time with.
Yeah.
But I can understand it pretty well. And
oh, interesting. What inspired you to do France instead of any other language?
I love the way French sounds. Nice. Also, I think like culturally, that country, France, like aligns with a lot of how I feel. You know,
yeah.
Food wise, wine. They're really into taking, you know, 6 weeks vacation every year. They go to the beach. They have
could go for that.
They have mountains where they go in the wintertime. They eat a lot of cheese.
Big into, all right, you convinced me. I'm going to learn French.
And like, and actually, to be honest, when I was a young man, there was a movie called The Diving Bell and the Butterfly.
Uh-huh.
And it's about I actually don't remember almost anything about it, but essentially a guy is injured, and the only part of his body he can move is like one eyelid.
Mm-hmm.
And they didn't realize this for a long time, but then they finally realized that he has control over his eyelid. And basically what they then do is read off the alphabet, and he'll blink at the letter.
Oh, wow.
That's how he'll communicate. But when they're doing this, it's this young attractive nurse just reading it in French. And so in the trailer, there's this bit where she's just, you know, this French woman is just reading the alphabet in French. And I was like, oh, I could listen to this. I could just listen to the alphabet. This is so beautiful. So, yeah, that's why.
That's great. That's so good.
Yeah. So, I don't know. We'll see. It's a 10-week class. So, talk to me in 10 weeks, and I'll tell you how this goes.
Nice. I'm excited to hear about your just experience at the community college level in general, because you did community college for a bit, right?
I did. I took some community college classes when I was in high school, but
nice.
You know, that was 20 years ago, Josh. Another funny story. So they had the textbook, you know, posted ahead of time. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't for sale at the bookstore.
Of course.
And so the teacher sent, and online on the community college website, just in their general guidance, it's like, wait till the first day of class to buy the textbook to ensure that, you know, the teacher's, you know, posting about the class is accurate and all this stuff. And the day of the class, right before class started, the teacher had sent out this email and it had the textbook in there, and it had some like links to like Goodwill books and some other like used bookstores. And so I clicked on one of them and it had a book in, it was shipping on like Goodwill Books or something, and it was coming from Hillsboro, and I was like, well, okay, that's not very far. Mm-hmm. And free shipping, and it was like $40. And I was like, well, I guess that's not terrible. Like on Amazon or something, it was $60 or something. And I was like, okay, $60 new.
Yeah.
So I got it and I ordered it, and it hasn't arrived yet, but I hope it'll get here soon. But then class starts and she's talking about the book, and she like clicks the link and she's like, $40? Never pay that much for this book. I will find a cheaper version. She's like, never pay more than $20 for this book. And I was like, oh man. So I'm expecting this book to show up and it's like a pamphlet or something, and I was like, wow, well, okay, Goodwill, way to stick it to me.
Yeah, I don't know, and I feel like a lot of classes they make the teachers put in some sort of book, and then they're obviously, a lot of the teachers are pretty sympathetic to the students, although I think that that's more of like a community college thing than it is a thing at other universities, because when I attended Oregon State, they did not give a rat's ass for the most part, except for the sociology guy. He was like, why would I ever charge you $200 for some book? No, don't do that, because he's a sociologist, so he understood where people were coming from. But yeah, I know everyone else is like, deal with it. It's a $130 book on communication. You need these ideas on communication. Yeah, you can't do a cheaper version.
When I was in college, it was like a technical school, and so mostly it was like technical classes, but then they had to have the required, you know, math and all this stuff. And there was a English class, I guess. There's only two English teachers in the whole school, and one of the English teachers wrote the book, the textbook.
Oh, yeah.
And the other English teacher did not like this other teacher, so I took both of them. I like English one was with one and English two was with the other. And the guy who did not write the book just badmouthed that teacher all the time. He's like, I got to teach this stupid book that the other teacher wrote and it sucks. And I was just like, look, man, just let's get an A and get out of here. College.
Oh, man.
What a time.
Oh, man.
Okay. I had one other topic tonight that I wanted to get over in this episode. And I've saved it for the last. Josh, we're going to play our first ever Would You Rather edition. So Josh and I have prepared three each Would You Rather questions for each other. This is the first time we've done this. And I guess we'll see how aligned our concepts are. Because if one of us is like, would you rather save the world or burn the world? And I was like, wow, that's a heavy one. Or would you rather have Coke or Pepsi? Like, oh, okay. So I hope we're at least a little on in line with each other, but I guess we'll find out. Do you want to go first or do you want to go second?
I want to go second.
Okay. Do you want to go back and forth or do you want me to do all three of mine?
Oh, let's go back and forth.
Okay. My first one. Would you rather be the bartender for Bruce Willis's character in Cosmic Sin or 16 Blocks?
Doesn't the one in 16 Blocks die?
He does. He's like a corrupt cop. But I think in Cosmic Sin, he has to deal with Cosmic Sin Bruce Willis, so.
I mean, probably the Cosmic Sin one. Like, let's be real. I'd rather deal with the old man than somebody who's who's gonna kill me.
I was trying to remember. There's a whole bit in that bar in Cosmic Scene at the beginning, isn't there? And there's like a jukebox, and they're in like desert earth or something.
And there's like a whole thing where they're like, "We need you out of retirement, Colonel. What's your face?" And then Colonel, what's his face? Is like, "I don't do that. I'm retired."
But he's still wearing his armor.
Yeah. That movie is incredible, by the way. Everyone should go watch that movie. Do not watch that movie.
It's like the Dune of its time.
Yeah. Of March 2021 or whenever it came out.
It came out like March 20, like heat of the pandemic. All right, you go.
Yeah. Okay. So I have a Star Trek question. Would you rather serve under Captain Picard or Captain Janeway?
Captain Picard. Because Catherine Janeway would commit all sorts of war crimes. And also, you'd be stuck in the Delta Quadrant.
It's a good point. Those are good points. Good points.
All right, my second one, similar to the first one, I'm realizing, but would you rather work in the barbecue joint in Planet Terror or the bar in Death Proof?
Jeez. I think probably in the bar in Death Proof, because that's like definitely a dive bar, and I love dive bars. I think I would get along better with people in a dive bar generally than I would with like the average Texas barbecue place.
I also you didn't mention this, but I meant to say, pretend this is like a month before what takes place in both those movies, because otherwise you'd burn to death in the Planet Terror barbecue.
Oh yeah. I was assuming so.
That would skew that answer, but I didn't know if you're really into that guy's secret sauce.
Nah, I probably can't have it. It probably has soy in it, so.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, I'd probably go to the Death Proof one.
All right. Give me number two.
All right, number two. Would you rather undo your viewing of your favorite Bruce Willis movie? So what is your favorite Bruce Willis movie before we get to the rest of the question?
12 Monkeys.
12 Monkeys? More than Sixth Element. Sense? Or Fifth Element?
Yeah.
Okay. That's so would you rather numbers. Undo it's your viewing movies. Of 12 Monkeys so you could watch it again with fresh eyes? Or would you rather have never watched Beavis and Butthead?
Probably never watched Beavis and Butthead. TBH.
Yep. I feel that.
That's a good one, though. All right, my final one. Would you rather be trapped on a desert island with your only viewing option being Bonfire of the Vanities or Billy Bathgate?
What horrible questions you've left me with. Oh, God.
Yeah, mine are all like, what are the shittiest situations I could put
in? What a choice, though. So, for the record, Billy Bathgate is number 28 on my list, and Bonfire of the Vanities is number 44. I did not like Billy Bathgate, though.
Well, I'll let you continue munching on this, but my thinking was Bonfire of the Vanities, worst movie, but I think if you were delirious, it would be better to have seen a million times, whereas Billy Bathgate, not a great movie, but watching it a bunch wouldn't make it any better.
So, I think that I would have to agree. I think I would go for Bonfire of the Vanities. That movie sucks, though. This is a great time to remind everyone that this movie is terrible.
Hey, it has that opening wonder, though. That was a lot of fun.
That opening wonder is great, and I could rewatch that over and over and over again. But good God. Good God. I just opened it up on Letterboxd, and one of the people that I watch on YouTube, Patrick Willems, he reviewed it, and he said, an amazing-looking movie. Everything else sucks.
Yeah.
1.5 stars. Yep. Oh, my God. My God. All right. My final would you rather. Would you rather live in our current timeline or live in the timeline where the Star Trek shows that we've watched are in our future, but we're just about to go into the Bell Riots and we'll have to live through those?
You're saying live in the Star Trek timeline?
Yeah.
Okay. Yep. I didn't know if you were saying live in a timeline where the Star Trek shows are about to premiere. And I was like, you mean live 100 years ago? That seems like a weird option. So repeat the question.
Would you rather continue living in our timeline where Star Trek is just fantasy, or would you rather live in the timeline of Star Trek existing, knowing that we are just about to / on the verge of entering the Bell riots seen in that Deep Space Nine episode?
I think I would have to say the Star Trek universe, only because you know there's an upward trajectory for humanity.
Yeah.
Because we're probably also going to have terrible events happen in our future anyways. So.
Yep. Yep. Well, there's a positive note to end.
Yeah. Yeah. Way to really sell it.
Well, my other question was going to be, would you rather be able to fly or turn invisible? But I guess we can't ask that one. That'd be number four.
Classic connection to this podcast is, would you rather fly or be invisible? We should have whisked the wheel on our own lives is what we should have done.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah. That'd be great.
If you could replace anyone in your life with Bruce Willis.
We just write down like familial relations or like the answers to like security questions. Like, would you rather replace your first dog with Bruce Willis or your girlfriend, your very first girlfriend?
Your mother's maiden name with Bruce Willis?
Bruce Willis? What's the color of your first car? It's a Bruce Willis.
Tis a silly thing.
That's what we get when I'm sleep deprived recording. It's it's a silly Josh. Mm-hmm. Silly Josh.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, thank you, listener, for listening to this rambly road of us having a good time. I hope you had fun. As always, email us, willisway@gmail.com. Find us online, willisway.com. I've forgotten our website.
Williswaypod.com, I believe. We could look it up, though.
Oh, yeah. Let's look it up, and then we'll edit this part out.
Okay.
Williswaypod.com. For the first time, I said.
Oh, man. Oh, man. Well, thank you. It was a pleasure.